Chapter 7, we have, thankfully, it's printed on the page. It won't be jumbling up in front of us and doing funny things. Well, unless my glasses are like that, but chapter 7. You know how the Lord can take a nobody, somebody just nobody, and do the things that he does is amazing. And it's kind of with Gideon. Gideon's no different than any of us are. And the Lord used him in a very powerful way. So just a little bit of a review for the sin, Israel's sin. We remember that the Lord had delivered Israel into the hand of Midian for 7 years. And they were oppressed for 7 years by them. It says that they came, these Midianites and people of the east and Amalekites, they came up from the east like locusts with their livestock and their camels, devouring the land and destroying their crops. It says that they were greatly impoverished. They didn't have sustenance, food. They really were in a desperate situation, living in dens and caves. And you'll see the term strongholds. And as I looked at it, it does seem to mean to refer to the crevices in the rocks as their strongholds. That's how desperate their situation was. And so when they cried out to the Lord, what did the Lord do? He sent them a prophet to remind them why they were in this predicament. That was the first thing he did. But he did hear their cry. And he called for a man named Gideon to deliver them. And it was this man, Gideon, that the Lord revealed himself to in the form of an angel. And I don't know what your mind thinks of as an angel, but maybe think of it in terms of this one that appeared to him was like a, very much like a human messenger that came his way. Nothing stood out about this one. But it was an angel of the Lord, a messenger from the Lord. And so Gideon proves the authenticity of the messenger. How does he know that what this man is telling him is true or not? How does he know that? And so he set out to prove it. And so he says, look, just hold on. I want to go and present to you this supper, a pot roast of sorts, whether goat or lamb, some unleavened bread. And so wait. And I think the idea was, wait, I'm going to do this hoping to see some sign to validate whether you are genuine, your message is real. So the Lord so graciously waited. Gideon came with his roast in the water and the unleavened bread, and that messenger said, put that on the rock there. Put the meat and an unleavened bread on this rock. On this rock. It was a particular rock. And pour out the broth. And so he did. A very strange thing. How would you like your wife to have prepared a meal and you come to give it, present it, and he says that to you? That'd be very difficult. But Gideon did it. And not only that, but when this messenger reached out to touch it with the staff, those items, he touched it, a fire came out of the rock, the solid rock, and consumed those things up. And the Lord then disappeared from before his eyes. That's the idea. It struck him so profoundly, obviously. I think I'd have done the same thing. I'd have feared for my life. I've seen an angel face to face. And so the Lord immediately comes and comforts him, saying those great words, peace be unto thee, fear not, thou shalt not die. And it was in this very same night that the Lord directed Gideon to take his father's two oxen, to throw down his father's altar to Baal and cut down the grove that was nearby. And for this, the morning came, the men of the city, a number of them probably related to him, Abiezrites or Ezrites, they demanded that Joash, his father, give him over so they'd kill him. which his father refused, and said, "Let you know if this is if God if Baal is really God, then let him defend himself." And so, in matter of fact, his father gave him the new name Jerubbaal, and it reminds them of his stand for the Lord against Baal. Right after that, the Spirit of the Lord enclosed Gideon, and he blew a trumpet, a ram's horn, a shofar. And those of his family gathered around him. I think many times you see the blowing of the trumpet, they're borrowing something from what they saw that the priests were to do. And so there was a signal of sorts by blowing the trumpet and a certain blast, and they would gather. If the priest did that, a certain blast, then the princes of Israel would come in. And another sound, Israel would, or the camps would come. There was a certain order. And so it looks like they borrowed some of this. They learned some of this in the wilderness experience, and it passed it on to these succeeding generations. So these Abiezrites gathered to him. He then sent out messengers to a couple of other tribes. Not all of them, but some that were nearby. And then Gideon seeks another proof that the Lord is really going to deliver Israel from the Midianite oppressors. And so you remember he lays out, he says, "Lord, look, if this is true, then I'm going to lay this fleece out on the flesh, threshing floor where you thresh the grain. I'm going to lay the fleece out, and if so, that you're going to deliver us from the Midianites by my hand, then make that fleece wet with dew and let it be dry all around it." And the next day, early in the morning, he went and looked, and sure enough, it was as he, and he wrung out a bowl full of water, right? Well, one more time. Laid out the fleece and asked the Lord, "If you would this time, as a proof that you're going to do this, cause the fleece to be dry and the ground all around it wet with the dew." And sure enough, the next morning it was that way. So he got his answer. Now, it was fine. Keep in mind, they've got nothing like what we've got of Scripture. And he's proving the Lord. And I think sometimes it's proper. You want an answer from the Lord, and perhaps you lay out, I have an idiom, we lay out our fleece. And so we do that. He proved the Lord. But now he got his answer. And now the Lord's going to prove him. We're going to see that. And keep in mind, the Lord has told him that he's going to deliver them from the Midianite by his hand. But he did not tell him how he was going to do it. And how the Lord does this, Gideon can't do anything. He's supposed to move forward. So the Lord is really going to put Gideon's faith to the test here by what he does. The Lord proves Gideon. So in verse 1, then Jerubbaal, who is Gideon, and all the people that were with him, rose up early and pitched beside the well of Herod, wherever that is. There was a well, I'm just assuming that it's nearby to Ophrah where he is. So that the host or the camp of the Midianites were on the north side of them by the hill of Mori in the valley. And so he could look down and see where they were. And the Lord said unto Gideon, "The people that are with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves, glorify themselves against me, saying, mine own hand hath saved me." Now, the Lord knows the people of Israel. He knows what they're going to do. He knows us. He'd know what we would do, what we think. So to circumvent this, he's going to do something very unusual to save the Israelites. "Now, therefore, go to, proclaim, cry out in the ears of the people, saying, whosoever is fearful and afraid, let him return and depart early from Mount Gilead. And that depart early is that it's actually the same kind of verb that is the name of Zipporah, Moses' wife, and her name means a bird. And so let them depart early means let them fly off. A swift escape. Go away. So if they're fearing and trembling, let them fly away from Mount Gilead. This is the only time that the term Mount Gilead is applied to the land of Canaan. Mount Gilead, the few other times it is used, is always with reference. And I was reading, going, well, wait a minute. They're on the west side of the Jordan River. And so I looked, and sure enough, it is the only instance. The land of Gilead, Mount Gilead, would refer to the land on the other side, the east side of the Jordan River. But I'm thinking that they called this whole area of Manasseh, who had area on both sides, could refer to it as Mount Gilead. So these that were fearful and trembling were allowed to return home. And we found out how many. And their return of the people, 22,000. And there remained, that is left, 10,000. So when Gideon had blown the trumpet and he sent messengers to about three other tribes that were nearby, 32,000 men came and answered the call to defend their country. 22,000 of those that came, thank the Lord they came, were fearful and trembling. And the Lord says, let them go home. Now, these are men of war. I'm thinking, people, you know what? No one wants to fight. No one wants to go to war. And there were 10,000. Two-thirds of them were dismissed. 10,000 remained. It's not the only time that it's like this, but I want you to notice how encouraged Gideon must have been at the outset. Look at all the people. Now, I'm of the impression that there were many more Midianites and Amalekites and people of the east that were settled down like locusts into grasshoppers down in this valley of Jezreel. But he must have been very encouraged to see these come out. But the problem was, they would glorify themselves thinking, we did this, and discount anything that the Lord had done. There were just too many, and so the Lord would change that. They thought with great numbers and by sheer force, that's what we think, we could overcome the enemy. That's not so. It simply is not true. And we need to look at it quite differently than just with the eyes. I want you to turn to 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 45. Just read a couple of verses here, and then we'll turn to Psalm. 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 45. You know the occasion? The Philistines and the Israelites are pitted against each other. In my mind, I've seen a valley between them, and they're yelling across the way at each other and intimidating each other. And Goliath has come out, and he's presented himself. He's a very, very large man and a warrior, and it describes him as he's a pretty big guy, and his strength. But in verse 45, then said David to the Philistine, Goliath, thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in heaven. I mean, what a perspective. David already saw the conflict done. He saw Goliath dead. He saw many of the Philistines dead in the field. He saw that. And it says, verse 47, and all this assembly shall know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. And you know that David took this man down. He picked out five smooth stones, and he put one of those smooth stones into his sling and began to give it a twirl and release that thing, and the Lord directed it right smack dab into his forehead, and this man fell down dead. So he took a boy, equivalent to a boy, a young man, and took down Goliath. And you know the rest of the story. Turn to Psalm 44, verses 1 through 8. We'll read these. Psalm chapter 44, verse 1. Says, to the chief physician for the sons of Korah, Maskell, we have heard with our ears, O God, our fathers have told us, what work thou didst in their days, in the times of old. How thou didst drive out the heathen with thy hand and plantest them. How thou didst afflict the people and cast them out. For they got not the land in possession by their own sword, neither did their own arm save them. But thy right hand and thine arm and the light of thy countenance, because thou hast a favor unto them. Thou art my king, O God. Command deliverances for Jacob. Through thee will we push down our enemies. Through thy name we will tread them under that rise up against us. For I will not trust in my bow, neither shall my sword save me. But thou hast saved us from our enemies, and hast put them to shame that hated us. In God we boast all the day long, and praise thy name forever, Selah. So there's too many. Doesn't mean the Lord won't use weapons. He does. But there's too many here. It's not just because of numbers and brute force. So verse 4, and the Lord said to Gideon, 10,000 left, one-third of the force remaining there with him. There's still too many. Bring them down onto the water, and I will try them. I'm going to refine these for thee there. And it shall be that of whom I say unto thee, this shall go with thee, the same shall go with thee, and of whomsoever I say unto thee, this shall not go with thee, the same shall not go. Now he's making it clear. There's no mistake in it. The ones we say go, go. And the ones we say stay, stay. That's just the way it is. So he brought down the people. He has no idea what the Lord's going to do. So he brought the people down to the water, and the Lord said unto Gideon, everyone that laps of the water with his tongue as a dog lappeth, him shalt thou set by himself. Take that, them, and set them over there to the side. And by lapping, what it means is they're going to reach down. You're going to see in the next. They're going to reach down. They're handed into water. They'll bring it up, and they'll take their tongue and lap that water up like a dog would. They're not getting down like a dog necessarily. They're bringing it up with their hand. And so the other group here, likewise, to set them aside in their own group, likewise, everyone that boweth down, that stoops upon his knees to drink. Evidently, there were some that got down on their knees and put their face into the water and then drank the water like that. It says, and the number of them that lapped as a dog, with his tongue, putting their hand to their mouth, were 300 men. But all the rest of the people bowed down upon their knees to drink water. And the Lord said unto Gideon, by the 300 men that lapped, will I save you. Send the other 9,700 men of war home. 300, and I'm going to do that. So, the Lord really is testing, by all means, Gideon's faith. I mean, it would test me to the nth degree. I think you'd be the same way. I mean, it's tough, but Gideon has proved the Lord, and now he must allow the Lord to prove him. Just to work this through. So the people, verse 8, so the people, 300 men, took victuals, food, in their hand, and their trumpets, the ram's horns. And he sent all the rest of Israel, every man, unto his tent, and retained or detained those 300 men, and the host of Midian was beneath him in the valley, beneath Gideon in the valley. He could see them there in the distance. And it came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him, arise in this very night. Not too much time to think about this. You know, thank the Lord about that. You know, I don't know how you are, but it would have been a sleepless night, and it would have been several sleepless nights until we get this thing really settled. And the Lord is really, in the same night, he's going to settle him about this matter. The Lord really knows how to deal with us. In the same night that the Lord said unto him, arise, get thee down to the host, to their camp, for I have delivered it into your hand. But if you fear to go down, go with Phurah, thy servant, down to the host, to that camp. And thou shalt hear what they say, and afterwards shall thine hands be strengthened, encouraged to go down unto the host. Then went he down with Phurah. So he feared to go down alone. I would have been the same way. There's a lot of things I fear that I don't want to do by myself. I can identify with this man. So he took his servant with him. Then he went down with Phurah, his servant, unto the outside of the armed men that were in the host. And that means he went down to the edge of their camp. Just to the edge of it. And the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the children of the east lay along the valley like grasshoppers. It's translated locusts, well. For multitude, and their camels were without number, as the sand by the seaside for multitude. You see, they had come up year after year after year doing this. And they expected to do the very same thing again without any problem. These Israelites are a pushover. Not this time. And when Gideon was come, behold, where? To the edge of the camp. Behold, there was a man that told. He recollected a dream unto his fellow and said, behold. Now, get this. The Lord's working on the other side of the matter. You never know what the Lord's doing on the other side or with someone else. You have no idea. I tell you, I've listening to things that you say sometimes, and I'm just struck with awe, for example, with what the Lord's been doing. I never would have, maybe I didn't expect it like this, what he's been doing in our children. It's just simply amazing. Things of late, and children have said things that I would have expected adults to say. They've been listening to what's been going on and with the teachings and such and what you've been teaching them. I mean, they've been listening, and they say profound things. It's just, wow, you never know what the Lord's doing on the other side. And so in this case, the Lord's working in the enemy. And so this one recollected a dream, told it to his fellow there. I dreamed the dream, and lo, a cake of barley. Notice what this cake did. A cake of barley. We're thinking just a little piece of bread tumbled into the host of Midian, into the camp, and came onto a tent. And it smote it, that tent, that it fell, and overturned it, that the tent lay along. Now, I figure that this cake of barley was like my wife's first biscuits that she made. We'll never forget this. Some of you probably had this. I mean, hard as a rock. You could throw that thing and really do some damage. It seemed like that was the case. It was tough. No, it wasn't tough. It was hard. And so you can imagine a cake of barley tumbling in and upending a tent. Now, that's a piece of barley cake for sure. But that's what he saw. It was something so insignificant, something you wouldn't expect. And that's what the Lord's doing here with Gideon, something you wouldn't expect with a man. And he's able to upend the entire army of the Midianites and the others. That's what it is when you have the Lord with you. He said, his fellow, when he heard this, his fellow answered in verse 14 and said, "This is nothing else save the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. For into his hand hath God delivered Midian and all the host." Wow. The reputation of Gideon has preceded him. How did they know about this man? Now, from what we know already, what we've been reading, I think, just my opinion, but Gideon's stand against the God of the nations, Baal, got him a reputation even, first of all, among his own people, his own family, his conviction and what he did to tear down the altar and such. He raised up an altar to the Lord. That, I think, based just on that, otherwise I do not know, that reputation went out, and it went out even to the place of the Midian's camp. Good things like this, they spread like wildfire. So that he has a reputation. They already know the man. They not only do they know the man, they know his father's name, Joash. Good, that is amazing. "For into his hand hath God delivered Midian and all the hosts." And it was so. When Gideon heard the telling of the dream and the interpretation thereof, that was very interesting because this word has to do with breaking it down. They began to break down what this meant, and they saw something terrible for them in view that was coming. The interpretation, they understood it, that Gideon did, that he worshiped and returned into the camp of Israel so encouraged and said, "Arise, for the Lord has delivered into your hand the host of Midian." And so what did Gideon do? He divided the 300 men into three companies or heads. Rosh is a simple term. It refers to a head or the chief. So he took the 300 men and put them into three parts, and he put a trumpet in every man's hand. I don't know how he got these, but he stirred up trumpets and evidently pitchers and so forth for every man to have, with empty pitchers of what? Pitchers that held water. Pitchers of water. And lamps. Some kind of a torch. Some kind of a firebrand that would burn for a little while within those pitchers. He gave them those things. He gave them those things. And he said unto them, "Look on me, watch me." It's like, you know, mom dealing with the kids. "Read my lips, see what I'm doing." But he's telling them, it's very important. "Put your eyes on me, what I do, watch me. And I want you to do the same. Look on me and do likewise. Copy what I do. And behold, when I come to the outside, the edge of that camp, it shall be that as I do, so shall you do. When I blow the trumpet, when I blow with the trumpet, I and all that are with me, then blow ye the trumpets also on every side," all around, "of the camp, and say, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon." So Gideon and the 100 men that were with him came to the edge of the camp, and in the beginning of the middle watch. In the New Testament, there seems to be four watches, though the Lord does refer to three. And so even that given, you're probably only talking about an hour's difference, but I'm going to say probably about 9 o'clock in the evening in the Middle East, 10 o'clock at the latest, right? The beginning of the second watch, he came there. They had just set the watch, but newly set the watch, and they blew the trumpets. and break the pitchers that were in their hands. And the three companies blew the trumpets and break the pitchers and held the lamps in their left hands and the trumpets in their right hands to blow withal, so that everyone could blow together all at once. I haven't read a word about a weapon yet. I'm not sure what they had, but you haven't seen anything about a weapon yet. They've come out probably with their farming implements, if they had any of those, very many. It's going to be my assumption that as this progresses, they will pick up the weapons of the dead and pursue. And they stood every man in his place, those with Gideon, round about the camp. And all the host ran. When they blown the trumpet, all the host ran and cried and fled. And the 300 blew the trumpets, and the Lord set every man's sword against his fellow. Now, he's talking about in the camp. You've got to have a picture here. When they had these torches somehow under an empty water pitcher, they had trumpets, and they break that. Maybe they just slapped that horn on there and break that off, and all of a sudden there's light shining all around the camp. That's always been the mental image I've had of it. But they blew that trumpet. And in that darkness of the camp, they can't tell who's a friend or foe. And they begin to kill whoever is near them. And that's the idea. They set every man's sword against his fellow. The confusion and the fear that took over these people, the Midianites, Amalekites, and the children of the east, even throughout all the hosts. And the hosts fled to Bethshitta in Zerarath and to the border of Abel Meholah unto Tabath. So they began to flee. Those that had lived through that part of it began to flee and head toward the east, trying to make their way to the Jordan River. And there would be fords there that they could cross. And so Gideon and his men, they're going to try to head them off. But they're running to this place. And the men of Israel gathered themselves together out of Naphtali and Asher and out of all Manasseh and pursued after the Midianites. Just to tell you what I think. That when these that had been dismissed and headed home heard the trumpet sound and of sorts this in the distance, very likely then, they received the courage, then the fear dissipated, the trembling, and they're able to go in and join in the fight. Sometimes it's just like that, you know, but the Lord turned it. And Gideon sent messengers on top of those that had come into the fight now. He sent messengers throughout all Ephraim, saying, come down against the Midianites and take, meaning to capture before them the waters unto Bethbara. I believe that this is the same place as Bethabara in John 1:28, where John was baptized, some of that area. It looks to be the same, best I could tell. And so they captured this area. They captured before them the waters unto Bethbara and Jordan. Then all the men of Ephraim gathered themselves together and captured the waters unto Bethbara and Jordan. So they got over there and blocked anyone from getting away as much as they could. They took those places. You think about this in the nighttime and the things that are going on. Look, they had wild beasts over there. You didn't just go up wandering by yourself in the woods. You didn't do that. I wouldn't do that here, especially in the summertime. And in the night? I don't think so. I'm going to have a troop with me to go out there like that. And so you didn't just haul off. You stayed along certain paths. And so you needed a place to cross. And they had these places. They were looking for places to cross. And the Israelites had them blocked now, headed them off. And it goes on. Then all the men of Ephraim gathered themselves together and took the waters of Bethbara and Jordan. And they captured the two princes of the Midianites, Oreb and Zeb. And they slew Oreb upon the rock Oreb. They named the place where they slew this prince after the one they slew. They named it the rock Oreb. And Zeb, they slew at the winepress of Zeb. So they named that area after him to memorialize the deaths of these princesses. And it does remind them of what the Lord did. At the winepress of Zeb, they slew Zeb and pursued Midian and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeb to Gideon on the other side Jordan. So they evidently had the princes, and some had made it beyond, and they were able to catch up to them, and they slew them and took their heads back as proof positive that, see, these guys are dead. So clear that they've died. Now, the next chapter is going to give us a little more information about this conflict and the deaths of these and how some of their own brethren failed to render aid to Gideon and the men when they needed it. And that's going to be a painful experience for them. But that's the gist of the chapter. I think there's some interesting things you can learn from it. He can take a virtually a nobody, a no name, and you know, if we just trust the Lord, see what he would do. He'll just won't use anybody, not in a positive way. He won't use anybody that doesn't believe, doesn't trust him. So many times we're too busy looking at ourselves. We need to see who it is with us, and then we'll have the courage to step forward. Can the Lord really do this in me? We have an impression from the Lord to do something. Why aren't we doing it? Because we're not believing. We're not trusting him. It's amazing what the Lord will do with a nobody. It's simply amazing. Just trust the Lord. We can do when he's with us. You have any comments or any remarks?